Most of the time on the show, we do real life profiles of real people's life journeys or, well, journey or whatever that trip was where you sure didn't come back the way you were when you started out or where you made an unexpected 180 or you lost your way or you crossed a border or whatever it was that got you to where you are now instead of where you were before you started. And if that rings a bell with you and you think you've got a story that you might like to share and other people might like to hear, then send us a note, info@hitching.org, and we'll see if there's some way that we can get together and record that story. Even if you're not in the Bay Area, don't hesitate, because we travel a lot. It's been known to happen. Or it might be that you know somebody that you want to set us on the track of and say, oh, get my uncle's story. That would be great.
That's info@hitching.org. So the last piece today is a true story about me. Over the years, I've written very little, actually, that's autobiographical. Not that I'm not very interested in myself, but actually, I'm generally a lot more interested in other people's closets full of junk than I am in my own, because with my own, I already know pretty much what's there.
Except for the surprises.
Yes. With this show, I've gotten into doing some of these things often when we're stuck and it's running short, and I think, well,
What can I do with five minutes here?
I'll tell about the time that, so forth. And it's always a real challenge, you know, why am I telling this story?
I sometimes find myself watching myself and questioning my own motives when I'm telling old stories, because there's always wonderful stories that they're just so great to drag them out and tell them to people. But then there's that little gremlin that says, are you really sure why you're doing this? Or are you really even sure that you've got it right by now? Has the story taken a momentum of its own?
I usually come back feeling, well, hey, I'm a lot more interesting person now than I was then, you know. There have been major improvements, I think.
This is a story about going for help.
When I was a kid, I learned the best way to survive a heart attack, let somebody else have it. Now, that might seem a little heartless, because they talk about childhood innocence, but I was kind of a mean little bastard. I didn't do bad things. I behaved really well. I mean, my teachers liked me. I got all A's. My mom just adored me. I always got the biggest piece of pie. And we didn't have money. Today I might be classified as underprivileged. And I didn't have any little brothers and sisters to pick on. So I'm going into the third grade, and my mom remarries, and we move up to Rapid City, South Dakota. And that was cool. I mean, we'd had a ratty little two-room house, and now my mom isn't so worried about money. My stepdad's okay. He buys ice cream, and he's in the Air Force, and maybe he flies the planes with atomic bombs. That'd be neat. But actually, he doesn't fly planes, and he's not really in the Air Force. He just works on the Air Force base, but not on the planes, actually in the accounting department. And after they're married, he doesn't buy ice cream. His name is Lester. I didn't like the guy. And after a few months, it seemed like my mom didn't either. Anyway, they weren't sleeping together. I didn't quite get what that was all about, what sleeping together was, but I knew you were supposed to do it. Once he got mad at me when I was chasing a couple of peas around the plate with my fork at dinner, and they had a big fight. Nobody was allowed to criticize my mama's little boy. So there's this little boy with a blonde crew cut and big ears. It's Sunday morning in January 1950. Heavy snow. His mom's in the kitchen doing the breakfast dishes. He ought to help her, but if he doesn't finish his battleship, he can't kill the communists. He's doing some stuff for his Cub Scout badge. He's making a battleship out of some pieces of wood. Nailed some scraps of 2x4 together, and now he's gluing on some sticks for guns, and then he'll paint it gray. Doesn't look much like a battleship, but it'll kill communists. He thinks all the time about the communists. They stole an atomic bomb, and one time at sunset, the sky was all red and clouds, and he thought they'd dropped it. Because they don't believe in Jesus. So he's on the floor in the living room, and the daybit is pulled out, and his stepdad is taking a nap. The guy had been shoveling snow and Now he's tired. He doesn't like to be in the room with his stepdad. The guy's like a weasel. He'll wake up and look at the battleship and snicker. You listen to him breathe. He's breathing hard. Now he's snoring. It's a funny snore, it's in the throat. He's kind of growling, and he says like, "Huh? What?" You think he's talking to you. He says louder, "Huh?" Then you understand. You're listening to something funny. You get up, you look at him. He's red-faced, he's making loud, heaving snores, like battleship guns, and you think of the battleship sailing out and millions of communists swarming like ants like they do in the comic books, and the big guns snore, and they die. If more people died, we'd have more money. Maybe he's dying. When people die, sometimes they leave you money. You go to the kitchen to tell Mom. You say, "Mom, he sounds kind of funny." You never know what to call him. You can't call him Dad. You can't call him Lester. You try not to ever call him anything. "He sounds kind of funny." And she comes in the living room and looks at the guy. She says, "Oh, my God." She asks, "When did he start?" "You don't know. You were working on the battleship." "Now he sounds really silly. Maybe he's joking." Mom says, "Go get the neighbors now." She runs over to the phone, and you don't know what you're supposed to do. "Put on your galoshes." I put on my galoshes. I go out the front door to start my journey for help. It's deep drifts. We read a story in class like this about the pioneers. They had to go through the blizzard for help. I just go next door to the Meshacks. Deep drifts. They never shovel their walks. I forgot my gloves. The wind's really sharp. Knock on the back door. Nobody home. They always go to church. Down to Peterson's. I'm standing there at the door trying to think what to say if Mrs. Peterson gets mad because they never gave trick-or-treats at Halloween. Maybe they're asleep. I go over to Agnew's. Buddy Agnew's my friend, or maybe he's not. I was helping him chop wood because they got a whole bunch of kids and they only got a wood stove, so he has to chop wood from old railroad ties they get somewhere. And we got in a big fight because I told him wood comes from trees and he said it comes from railroad ties. I hit him in the mouth. I go back home. I come in and Mom says, "Did you get somebody?" I say, "No." She says, "Well, try." So I have to go out again. And it was like in the reading book. Then the little boy walked out into the snow-white world. He went to the house of Mr. and Mrs. Walker down the street. Mr. Walker was old, but he always shoveled his sidewalk. The little boy went up the steps, knocked on the door. He tried to think what to say. "My stepdad is dead. My mom needs some help. Hello, I'm Joey." The door opens. It's Mrs. Walker. She says, "What's the matter?" "I don't know." Then the little boy ran home. He hoped that Mrs. Walker would follow him. In the driveway, he saw a big ambulance with flashing lights. He went up the steps. There were people in the living room. He didn't know if he should go in. They looked busy. Maybe Lester was dead. That'd be okay, but how would he get his battleship? If he went in and somebody saw him and they'd say, "What are you doing here?" Maybe you weren't allowed to see a person die until you'd been in the army. Maybe. He stayed on the step. It was very cold. No, he could go in. It was his house. He stayed on the step a long time. Well, maybe he should knock and his mom would come out. He took out his gloves and it was really cold. when people died, you were supposed to feel real sad, and so he tried to feel sad, but all he felt was hoping his stepdad would die. And the Meshachs, and Buddy Agnew, and the people in the reading book, and the communists, everybody, except his mom. And then it'd be a whole different world. So I told this story to someone, and they said, well, you must have come in eventually. I don't know if I ever did. And you don't have to feel ashamed about anything. You didn't kill anybody. No, I don't think so. I've always been pretty shy about things like that. And I've told people, sometimes, I saw my stepfather die. That's not strictly true. I saw him start to die. And then I went around the neighborhood to get help, and didn't. Then I stood out on the front step, very confused, until I got too cold. Then I guess I went inside and found my mother, and grew up. At some point in time, I thought, maybe that's what dying is like. You're there on the bed, but it isn't you. You're not even related to you, although there's some connection. You're somebody else. You're a little kid that's very confused, and you go out to get help, but you're scared to knock. You can't really say what you need. You just tromp around in the drifts. And then you go back home, and people are there all around the bed, so you stay out on the porch, very cold, feeling ignorant and cowardly and lost. And you wait for your mother to find you.
You were listening to Conrad Bishop talking about going for help. And if you'd like to hear more hitchhiking or things you missed right away, visit our website, www.hitching.org. We've got all our past shows archived there. And you can check out our story contest and our weblog of current news and how we're surviving. And if you're curious, you can check in to how we got to where we are now. We've got a chronicle of the 30-odd years, very odd years, of doing this stuff.
The Independent Eye is supported by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts and by the Hitchhikers Guild. Please join and help support the show. You may not be aware, but we get no money, not 1 cent, from the 13 stations we're carried by. Great enthusiasm, but no money.
They need all that cash just to keep their own business running.
It's all what we piece together from donations and CDs and, well, commissions like...
the germ calls.
Last month for a museum exhibit, I wrote 10 phone messages for germs, viruses, and parasites. You can hear them at the Maryland Academy of Sciences. But seriously, your donation will help. Memberships at www.hitching.org. This is Conrad Bishop.
And Elizabeth Fuller. Peace and joy.
Confusion. Now, this might be useful in getting through life in the 21st century. From the Oxford English Dictionary, confusion.
Discomfiture, overthrow, ruin, destruction, perdition.
A cause of overthrow or ruin.
Discomfiture, putting to shame.
Discomfiture in argument.
Mental perturbation, such as prevents the full command of the faculties.
The act of confounding or throwing into disorder.
Tumult, excited and disorderly commotion.
A mixture in which the distinction of the elements is lost by fusion, blending, or intimate intermingling.
The confounding or mistaking of one for another, failure to distinguish.
One can trace confusion back to the year 1290. Before that, things were better.